I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
And welcome back to another episode of
Mostly Lit.
Welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit.
Welcome back to another week, guys.
We're back. We're very sorry we couldn't be here last week.
We're going to have a lot more content for you guys coming in the next few weeks, so it's all bless. This is cute. All right. So what are you guys reading this week?
Oh, do you know what I'm reading?
What?
You know what I'm reading? I told you what I'm reading.
What are you reading this week?
How to Love a Jamaican.
Oh, yeah.
By Alexis Arthurs, I believe.
Yeah, how is it?
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has a way, because at the beginning I read the first story, I was like, ugh, you know how like sometimes I like language to be like beautiful and shit.
Mm-hmm.
In her language. I mean, the way she writes is very like straight to the point, very modern. And I was like, oh, I hope I like this. But I actually did. I think she has a way of tapping into modern issues that like young people go through in a way that is quite interesting. But what I loved about it is that it captured, obviously I don't know how to be a Jamaican, but I guess it captured different identities within the Jamaican diaspora really, really well.
Mm.
And so she'd jump from like a girl who grew up in New York to somebody in Jamaica, and how he'd refer to outside places as foreign, or like, and I thought that was quite cool. So yeah, that's what I'm reading. How to Love a Jamaican. This author is a series of short stories.
All right. So, what was your favorite short story in there? Have you read? I haven't started reading it yet.
Second one. Oh, it's called Mash Love.
Oh, okay.
Or Love Mash, or something like that. Basically, that saying was basically this young man who has a twin brother, and he's always kind of living in the shadow of his twin brother, and the term mash love or love mash, I don't know which one until I have to look at it again, but it comes from his like mum used to refer to like people who would, you know, when you'd like someone like when you're a teenager and you know they're not good, but you're like, I'm there in it. And I think that's what she was referring to. And I think that was quite cool.
Okay.
That's my favorite story. And I quite like that because it told them a story of like a man and there wasn't any sort of like relationship issues. It was just him and how he felt like living under the shadow
just
of
his experiencing
twin. Yeah, and it was just really nice, like just focused on like family relations and yeah, masculinity, I guess.
Cool. I think I need to pick that book up again
it's really good.
And actually read some of the short stories properly. What are you reading this week?
Oh,
what have you been reading? What are you reading?
I'm reading The Book of Disquiet by Fernando Pessoa, and I started rereading Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison as well. Because you know the event we went to for the magazine, I forgot, it's terrible, I can't remember the name of the magazine.
Pitch Cool.
Pitch, yeah.
So we went to Pitch Cool almost this week.
Yeah, so we did that this week. And I met this guy, he's a director, and I was just like, yeah, you know, mostly he was like, he reads a lot as well. And we just started talking about Invisible Man, started going back and forth about it, started talking about The Sellout by Paul Beattie. He said he absolutely loved it, but then I just told him about, you know, the kind of what I believe to be the social responsibility that writers have when it comes to satire, you know, because some people will be laughing at you rather than, you know, they won't get it. So yeah, that made me kind of think, wow, shit, I need to go back and revisit Invisible Man, and I'm just loving it all over again.
The whole 600 pages.
Oh, fam, it's amazing. It's just a joy. It's a joy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, The Book of Disquiet by Fernando Pessoa, I'm just rereading bits of that. You know, it's a good book to read when you're feeling in a bit away. But okay. Yeah, that's that.
Cool. I'm reading Osho again. mainly
you don't tire.
I don't tire. Mainly because I've just been having a moment. And
is he a Buddhist?
He's an Eastern philosopher. He's an Eastern philosopher.
Right.
I don't think he has a specific religious title. Okay, so I know that he moved mad in real life, but that's never here nor there. He's dead.
Oh,
but
he's dead.
Yeah, he had this whole cult in the 80s and he didn't really lead it though. He's like the figurehead, but he never really dealt with the people.
It's a sex cult. Were like having?
Oh yeah, there were people that were having like loads of sex in there,
okay,
and stuff. But he didn't. But he kind of speaks a lot about sex.
It wasn't like a Charles Manson thing, was it?
No, it wasn't. But like he was the figurehead. Mm. But then the person that was running the actual cult was kind of moving crazy, and all the people started doing them. But anyway, so I'm reading this book by Osho called Intimacy, and it actually it's kind of just made me raise a lot of questions about like social media and how emotional. Intelligent we are when it comes to people via social media and whatnot, and like various different.
I think it's killing our emotions.
Yeah, I think
a lot of people
in various different forms and in different ways. But it's a good little piece on like, you know, because he talks a lot about nature and how to be a bit more natural with how we feel and what we feel and that, and how kind of like a lot of Western things have kind of like clouded us, like, and taken what? Away from my nature. But like it's more to do with how can I explain it? All right, so some people, you know how there's this big like there's a big diet phase, for example, and people are like, you know, they're talking about the whole intermittent fasting, all these different things. People are doing intermittent fasting, and you know, and it's like, oh, I shouldn't eat now because X, Y, and Z, or I shouldn't do this, etc. Oh, He basically just says, you know, if you're going to just be natural, just dig into what your actual nature is. If you feel like, you know, hugging someone, if you feel like, you know,
I don't know if that I agree with that.
But like, I know I'm probably not explaining the context right. I'll just say go and read the thing. But
be your natural self, and there'll be chaos.
But be your natural
just a chaotic person.
Depends. It all depends. And I think it's only chaos because a lot of people are taught not to be natural. So when you're trying to, it's really weird. Intimacy is a good book though, so far.
People are monsters, Alex.
Yeah. They are. But you know, you gotta find the joy in between, I guess. And he talks about you know, the temporariness of relationships and love and all these different things. It's just a nice little read just to be on the train when I'm trying not to be on social media scrolling. I just try to go through my Kindle and read something that's easy and digestible to pick up. So that's what I'm reading this week.
Interesting.
Anything? Oh,
not really. Yeah. What? You know.
I like it, man. I think everybody else should try it a little bit. I'm probably not explaining it the best way. That's not my issue.
Books,
isn't it? Huh?
He's been quite a few.
He's written several books. I mean, he writes in the same vein as several other.
Is it like that guy Eckhart Tolle?
Kind of.
Yeah.
I think their books would probably be in the same section of Waterstones.
Pseudo something,
spirituality, that kind of stuff. The power of now. Anyway.
Don't you feel like he's like teaching you some, you know, how worthwhile is it? Because I feel like anybody can feel all of that.
It's
religion. It's just another, it's like new age religion.
He talks about spirituality over religion, and kind of like the way that, you know, religions kind of inhibit people, or structure them or keep them rigid.
And his religion doesn't.
And his religion doesn't, because he doesn't have one. He doesn't look at religion in the same way. But
isn't that idea of spirituality and what you must conform to and being allowed to do all of these things? Isn't that just another form of rules?
Mm-mm, not necessarily. He's just basically saying be open to it. He's not saying you have to do X, Y, and Z. He's just saying be open to just thinking open-mindedly about other things and just trying to see other perspectives. Doesn't mean it's going to take you away from your religion. Just be open to thinking about the spiritual.
What's the name
side.
Of his cult?
I cannot remember what it was.
I'm going to read up about it.
There's a documentary on Netflix called Wild Country. It's about Wild Country.
It's about Osho.
Read that. Watch that. It's mental. But yeah. Okay. Cool, cool. Anyway, that's what I'm reading. And various other short stories. I'm reading the Penguin British short story thing, the collection.
Yeah.
Penguin did do it. I think his name's Nick Heschner or something, or mm-hmm. Philip Heschner. But yeah, that's what I'm reading.
Okay. Oh yeah, I was talking to, I forgot her name, from New Beacon Books, and there is a young boy who has published his first book at the age of 13. His name is Elijah Frederick.
Okay.
And I love the name Elijah because my babes from the originals is called Elijah.
Oh, okay.
And he's like the best damn character ever in any season.
Elijah.
Of any series.
I liked Klaus, but it's...
Yeah, because you just like mess. yeah. And his name is Elijah Frederick, guys. Go and check him out and go and check out his book. I think it's an amazing achievement to have published something at the tender age of 13.
Mm, okay.
So congratulations to Elijah.
Cool. Congrats. So the main book discussion we're going to talk about today, as well as probably dabbling in some Halloween stuff, is Washington Black by Essie Edugian. And she was shortlisted for the Man Booker this year. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, she didn't win.
She was at Cheltenham as well.
She was at Cheltenham. So she's a Ghanaian-Canadian writer.
Eh? She's from Ghana?
Yeah.
You're chatted shit. Oh my god, okay.
Her parents moved there from.
I need to reread the book now.
Why?
Just because you're one of my people.
All right. Anyway, but she's a Ghanaian Canadian writer, from what I remember reading. And she's written this book called Washington Black. And I wanted to get you guys' initial thoughts on the story. If you guys have any way that you can summarize the story. I'm looking at Ray because Ray tends to summarize the story better than I can.
I can summarize the story in one word.
Garden.
Convoluted.
Right. What is the summary of the story?
I don't want to do the summary now.
Okay.
Somebody else can do the summary.
So the Washington Black is about a slave called George Washington Black.
An enslaved person. Alex, there's no such thing as a slave. There's the enslaved and the enslaver. There's no slave. Yes, trust me, Alex.
He's an enslaved black person in Barbados, and he embarks on this tale across 400 and something pages of this book, and it's just basically just kind of a channel of his life from when he's a young boy up until when he's 18,
The main thing of helping Titch.
That's the main thing? Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's the main thing.
No, it's not really, but it's part of it. So if we can kind of break that down as we go through the book. But he embarks upon, he gets kind of taken on by his slave master's brother to help him with contraption.
He has a lot of guilt.
Yeah, he has a lot of guilt. But he helps him with this contraption to help him fly. It's like an air balloon, but he calls it a cutter.
A cloud cutter.
And so he kind of takes Washington on to do this, and in a way it's Washington's way of escaping being enslaved in a sense, but you know, he's still kind of spiritually enslaved by a lot of different things that are happening around him and the climate of the world at the time. Initial thoughts on the book?
Boy, I mean, she writes really lovely. She's got a nice way of words. She's a great storyteller, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of thought that she was trying to take the slave narrative and, you know, twist it up, take an unconventional approach to the slave narrative. And I just thought some of it was just very implausible. I was just like, really? Really?
Like what?
Oh, okay. So when they're in the Arctic.
Okay.
And they're looking for my man's dad. And I'm just like, oh, really? They're in the Arctic. He's gone from the plantation to the Arctic. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And then they go towards Morocco and all these other... I don't know. It's just kind of just like, come on. Do you know what I mean? I feel like the best character for me was Big Thing. Oh, what's her name again?
What, Kit?
Yeah,
Big Kit.
She was the best character, and what? She, you know, like she's just in the first part of the book, and then you don't hear from her again properly. I loved her. She was calm, bro.
We'll get onto Big Kit in a bit.
But yeah. I did like the. I think again the head on the pike thing as well, right at the beginning. I thought that was just unnecessary because of the kind of story she was writing.
Okay.
I just thought that kind of detail was not needed at that point. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. What do you think about it?
Well, I didn't finish it. However, I really, the first thing, like, I picked this up and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, another slave story. But then I sat down and I was like, have I actually read a slave story? And I've read a lot of post-slave and we're just about going to get enslaved, but I don't, I'm trying to think about proper like slave narrative and I don't know if I read it.
Can we say slavery? Because I feel like when we're just like slave, it's just, it's making me really
slavery cringe. But what
like
kind of
slave story,
but what kind of slave, what kind of slave narrative would you have?
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
I'm
like, I know
a lot story of about slavery, I guess.
A story about someone that's enslaved, apart from like 12 years of a slave, which
you
I didn't read.
Oh, didn't
I
read
watched the film. It was just loads of stills.
You ever read Roots?
No, never read Roots. Watched Roots.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why I was a bit like, oh, actually, when I think about it, I think it was just the heavy topic that I wasn't here for.
You must have read one.
No. I read like Coming Out of Slavery and all the rubbish that comes after that.
Oh, okay. And the apprenticeship.
Yeah, and then phase. I've read just before slavery. I mean, Heart of Darkness, that's from a white man's perspective. I don't think I've properly read about a slave, a book about a slave in slave time, writing about slavery. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. I think I have.
So
this is like one of the first, I think. And I was pleasantly surprised at how amazing her writing is. I think it has, it balances simplicity and lyric, like that clarity, and but she also finds a way to make it lyrically sound nice. I think that, like, she has a really great balance of that. I also quite like the pace of it because she started off and it was like, oh God, it's going to be one of them ones where I'm a child, but then it kind of skips a little bit a few months in. So I kind of I really liked the pace of it.
Okay.
And also I thought the characters were complex.
I love Wash.
Yeah, I feel like the characters were very complex and even the disparity between the master, between how he would obviously, how the slave look at him and then how Titch, his brother, looks at him. And the just the different viewpoints that we get of all the different characters, even like Big Hit, who at the beginning was this big force. And then there was this, she finds a way to instill this vulnerability about her. Like the story of when she kicked him, but it was a bit more harder than she'd expected. And Washington had like two broken ribs. And at the like when he was asleep in the evening, she was crying and saying, oh, my son, my son. And I thought that was quite nice because in the beginning, she was very much just a very,
very
strong
tough
woman, you know?
I love the bit that where she wrote about basically when Big Kit was basically broken, when the slave master put the head on the pike and said, you can't go to your,
homie,
your homeland without your head. And then, you know, that's just kind of like, wow. There's literally no escape now. Do you know what I mean? I thought that was amazing, that book.
I don't know. Like, I think the book was good, though. I mean, she did, as you guys say, she does write really well. She writes really well. She does have her moments. I do think that have her moments with that. And I think that she did get the tone really right, like for Washington's voice as the overall narrator.
Yeah,
like even just the way that he speaks based upon the century he was born in and all these, and the way that she structures the words.
I see what you mean, but I feel like now, I feel like we've taken in so many like narratives about slavery and stories in that region of time that when we read a book now about, you know, about slavery, there is a voice that's going to come in your head and it's going to be a strong voice, no matter, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like whenever I read a book and there's a slave master in there, I always imagine this southern annoying voice, bro. Do you know what I mean? Like something out of the Boondocks or something.
If it's the South of America, then yeah. But if it's the Caribbean, you're gonna get a really British person.
I found it very difficult to distinguish between the two. I was literally like, wait, where are we again? Oh, okay, we're in Barbados.
Yes.
I had to really, because in my head, I was in South America.
Yes, exactly. Exactly that. Yes, I kept forgetting. I kept forgetting that Titch was English.
Really?
When they talk about Britain, I'm like, why are you talking about London? What's going on?
Like, oh shit! Yeah, they're in the Caribbean.
That's an interesting thing because that means.
But that's the type of stories that we're. Yeah, that's we're hearing.
The whole narrative of the enslaved is that it's of South.
It's the American.
Yeah, it's the American story. Yeah. It's still the American story. Mm. But
what did you think of Titch?
Weak.
Oh no!
I felt him really.
You know, one of the
you like Atticus Finch, so you know, of course you like Titch.
You know those liberal people,
yes,
that are really
golden, exactly.
You know, the whole abolitionist, the whole like I'm trying to, like, I don't even know if you guys got to this bit in the book, but he was talking about I saw you as a member of my family, I saw you as relative, and I was cringing all these.
You know what? You know reading about Titch, what comes straight.
Oh yeah, Titch is the Slave Master's brother. Yeah. If you haven't mentioned it, but yeah,
it's basically. When Oscar Wilde says the worst slave owners were the ones who were kind to their slaves, those are the worst slave owners.
Yeah,
because they stopped people from actually seeing what the person's situation was like. Do you understand? That's what kept coming in my head when I was reading about Titch.
So I liked Titch not because of his character. I liked the way Essie wrote him, in that there were parts in it where he would see the injustice and almost ignore it. So there was a time when they were walking and they were on the periphery of the Faith plantation and they heard people getting beaten and he'd turn around and he'd say, "My God." And I'm just like, "You fucking prick." I got so pissed off. I'm just like, are we supposed to feel sorry for you? Because I got really pissed off because what I liked about him was that he were able to see, I think, somebody that in the face of it possibly was a real racist, however had this human compassion where he didn't want, you know, when you have a pet, like that's still your pet, they can't wild out, but you might pat them and feed them once in a while, do you know what I mean? And I think that was what Titch saw in Washington, like that was his pet. And the emotion that he felt for him was the same emotion that you'd probably feel for your dog.
Yeah, it's the charity. Like I did kind of have this whole thing in my mind about the enslaved and animals. Obviously there's
that's
how they were treated. It's like, oh, you can now be my servant, I'm going to give you all your livery and your different clothes now, and you can't go back to the hut and all these things. And I just found it really strange. It's like when you go to the Battersea dog home and you just see the dog there and you pick it up and now it's in this nice place with all the, you know, after it's been beaten or treated cruelly.
There was a part that really kind of summed up the way, I guess, you know, the enslaved were seen at that time. It's when I believe what's his name, the main slave owner, the one at
Erasmus Wilde,
was talking to Titch, and then he was just like, "Are you worried about me using bad language in front of, you know, these slaves?" And then he was basically like, "They're part of the furniture."
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? And that made me remember that book that we read by Ishmael Reed, Flight to Canada.
Yeah,
where he was basically like, "I am a thing. Yeah. I am an object. This table and me, what's the difference?" Do you know what I mean? I was like,
there was a bit that was mentioned, towards the end of the book as well, when he finally ends. Well, he does meet up with Titch again a bit later on in life, but then there was a kind of a throwaway phrase about things and slaves. And it kind of panged at, like, because I was thinking
that,
that's what
from both sides, because there was a part when, you know, when Titch wanted to get his balloon collector thingy, whatever, his stupid cloud cutter working, and he needed men to work it. And then he went to see Erasmus, and for somebody who thinks that, you know, apparently slaves are people, they were like bargaining over bodies. And I was at that point, I was like, he started with like 10 or something or 12. And, oh, you don't stop, do you? And there was this back and forth of
just bartering over property.
Literally, like actual lives. And it was just that even at that point, Erasmus referred to Washington as, "That's my property. What are you doing?" And it was just like, even when you were talking about Derek about, oh, you don't swear in front of them. I think he said something like, that because obviously Big Kit was there, And he said something about, don't worry, they don't have sensitivities so that they don't really feel that something what I'm saying is actually bad. And of course, with that mindset, you wouldn't care to kill or hurt people. And I just found that so wild. It's because weird. even as much as Titch was kind, his philosophy at the core of it was that he believed in it. Otherwise, if he felt so strongly about racism, he'd be one to tell people.
Everything was that's why I said weak, because I feel like everything for Titch was everything weak? Was self-serving for him. Everything, like the fact that he took on Wash as an assistant, self-serving to him. Washington was bright and like a prodigy or whatever he decided to call him, and all these different things. He's like, okay, you can draw. Like,
but even though he didn't anticipate me. That, so he was like, oh, wow, you're smart.
He's like, oh, now you can benefit me
even further. Yeah,
but then also I can take you out of this environment. I can do all this for you. This for me. And then it just took one circumstance that kind of happened in the book for them to have to escape or leave the plantation. And it's just like, and it was so easy for Titch to leave it.
The thing is
in various travels that they had.
The thing is like what you were saying, Ray, about how they're looking at when he was talking about Big Kit saying, oh, they lack sensibilities, blah, blah, blah. They're like, they're lying to themselves. I feel like they have to force that kind of thinking on themselves so that they can actually treat them that way. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I heard this amazing quote, like, you know, the slavers didn't enslave because they were racist. They became racist because they were enslaving. They had to use racism as a means to justify what they were doing.
Are they racist? I think they're racist.
No, they weren't.
I believe that because there was a part, right, when Erasmus was talking to Titch and they were talking about how their uncle, so basically this plantation, Faith Plantation, was owned by their uncle, something black.
Yeah. Name.
And when he died, he passed it on to Erasmus. And that conversation really struck me because in that whole conversation, there was not a mention of slave or of the enslaved people. It was more so, how am I going to run this plantation? How am I going to run that plantation? I've got all of this, like all of these different things, all these businesses to run.
As if it was a company,
so, yeah. And so exactly. And so
it's when about you, economics.
Exactly. And so when you're thinking like that, having people to do the job for free is not a wild concept. You're thinking, oh, great, I have power to ensure that people work for me for free and run these things so that I'm providing profit and money for these other plantations so that they can work and therefore my family can be wealthy. And phew, thank God Black died because we were really running out of resources. I think that is the overall thing. Like economics really covers possibly the main reasons people were swapping gunpowder and tea or whatever.
It's the only reason.
Do you know what I mean?
It's the only reason.
And I think once you realize that and you think, okay, I'm doing this for profit, you can manipulate and treat people in any way, shape or form because you need to get the money. And in that, you're looking at it like, well, I'm telling them what to do. As soon as you start telling somebody what to do and they fear you and you do it and they do it, like, I'm really bossy. If I tell you to do something and you're doing it, I'm going to manipulate you and make you do it all the time.
Wow.
And if I have to force you to do it, I will do it. Okay. And if I have the power and the means to beat your ass,
so you could have
I probably will.
So you could have been a slave master. You could have been a mistress.
But I'm saying that conditioning, like that conditioning really, it really signifies a lot and is one of the main.
Ray, the problematic fave.
Problematic fave.
I wouldn't have been
she
a
really
slave
master.
She really
just said with vim, yeah, I'll manipulate you to get out. Like,
I would be
really
the slave
said
master.
It with vim, like, God.
But yeah, I think that is that when that conversation was happening and they were talking about the different plantations, that there was no mention of the fact that there are human lives behind all of this working.
Because they can't. Because that like, think, do you know how...
There's no HR.
Do you know what's perfect?
Basically.
Even the HR department are racist.
Do you know what's a perfect example of this? Yeah? This might be a bit out there, but you know in The Good Place?
Oh, yeah.
When they're about to press the button... Yeah. That will kill what's her name?
The judge.
Not the judge, man. Janet. They're about to press the button.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just like, I'm not human. So then they're about to press it. And then as soon as she's like, show some humanity, they're like, oh, I can't do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have to dehumanize the person in order for you to actually like kill them or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Someone call, hi, I'm in the sugar cane.
Do you know what I think?
I'm picking cotton. I need help.
You're moving mad.
My employer
you're
just.
You're moving mad.
Do you know what I mean? Writing a letter to, you know, but it's one of them ones. It's just like, I do see what you're saying, Derek. Mm. But like, and it is true. Like, there was no one for the slaves to actually be like, you know what I mean? Like, everything was in everything. Like,
you're actually both saying ridiculous
things. I'm so sorry.
Now.
No, it's just,
what do you
so
mean
stupid.
There was no one there for them? Who they're going to complain to?
Who the fuck could they have gone to, Alex?
I'm not saying, no. What I'm saying, obviously, the whole idea about slavery anyway. Yes. But as like you said, it's like when they show a little bit of humanity, they've got to take that away in order for them to control
exactly.
and do what they're saying. So
exactly.
basically, when Erasmus, the master, came over to them and was like, you guys are all trying to kill yourselves.
Yeah.
So we're not gonna do that anymore because I control you.
You're talking like he came up and was like, that's what we're not gonna
that's,
do.
That's what he said. He's like, this is what we're not gonna do. So first of all, I control you on this plane and I control you on the spiritual plane.
This is so, that when he did that, it really
you
know irked me.
So you guys think you're going to escape.
Mm. But you're not. It really
you're not,
irked
you're gonna,
my
you're
spirit.
You're gonna die when I tell you you're gonna
it
die.
It really irked my spirit.
And the fact that like Big Kit was like, oh, now I can't kill myself. I'm surprised that all of them just didn't all kill themselves anyway, because they would have just been like, well, it's better than being here, kind of thing.
That's
me thinking from this perspective now, isn't it?
On some Killmonger thing.
I was going to say something and I forgot. It's probably a lie.
But you know what this? You know what this book really reminds me of? It reminds me of Django, fam. It's literally Django, where my man frees Django, says, look, you can be my apprentice, bounty hunter apprentice. Realize Django's really good. They make a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. Then, like you said, when what's his name turns around and he's like, oh my God, when they're, you know, beating the slaves and whatever. There's a bit in Django where there's Monsieur Candy gets one of the dogs to rip the slave apart. Yeah, and Dr. King Schultz is there, like, you can tell he's stressed, bro. But he's powerless. He couldn't do anything. Mm. But then as we get to the end of the movie, it's just kind of like Dr. King's just like, fuck this. You know what? Fuck it. That's why he shoots my man. He's just like, I couldn't help myself. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. So like, just like, so maybe perhaps Titch would have got to the point where he's just like, I can't turn a blind eye to this anymore. This is wrong. Even though he knows his life will probably end if he goes against, the institution of slavery, he maybe would have sacrificed himself the same way Dr. King Schultz did in Django Unchained.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But he didn't.
He didn't.
He fully didn't. He literally ran across.
Because he likes the good life.
Titch ran across
Titch
the globe.
Titch is a gentleman. He likes the good life.
He's the youngest child of a rich family.
Yeah.
He never
Which
had the
means he has freedom, the, like what
there you
Adam
go.
Grant says.
There you go. Originals. You had freedom, rather. Erasmus had the burden of all of a sudden having all this stuff. Not like, you know, and Titch could there build this air balloon and fly across the
cloud cutter.
Okay.
I like the way Titch talked.
You like the way he spoke?
Yeah, it was so weird. I just really like the way
he
spoke.
You love that shit, innit? Why you like, that like regal English manner?
Yeah. That's how we...
It's like, you know, Oscar Wilde-ish.
Oh,
I knew he
was going to say that.
Yeah. I originally was like, oh, you're so charming. It's so too bad you're fucking racist.
Mr. Darcy-ish.
Yeah, it was quite nice.
Okay. But what I did kind of want to, you know, when he put the head on the spike.
Yeah.
And was like, and it was that kind of control about what you can and cannot do.
Yeah.
Do you think that we still have those kind of institutions in place today with regards to certain structures such as like, whether it be religion
or... It's called
or,
the Catholic Church, Alex.
There we go.
Of course it is. Because there's certain things you have to go through in the Catholic Church before your soul can be sanctified. If you commit suicide, or if
that's
you,
like with most religions, if you commit suicide,
well, then okay, forget suicide. If you die and you have to have a certain kind of burial.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand? That's basically saying that you're dead, but the people on this plane still have control over your spiritual life, which is exactly what the head on the pipe thing is.
Mm.
Of course it is. Because it's like when in Constantine, when one girl, there's twins, and one of them kills herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes to the priest and she's like, Father, please, she has to have a Catholic burial.
Mm.
And he's like, it's a mortal sin. She cannot have a Catholic burial. She's going to hell. You understand? That's like, wow. So this guy's got control over her
whole spiritual entire
life.
Spiritual.
He had control in her, you know, material life and her spiritual life.
And this is what I mean. I'm just thinking like that's what it is. Like, I mean, even in some Chinese cultures, if you're not buried, if your body's not buried within a particular time frame, like there's this spirit, there's this like demon that comes and takes your spirit to the underworld because it's not been claimed by your family. This is what I'm saying.
Interesting. Like, that's why they used to put like.
Did you watch?
On
have
the
you
eyes,
watched
it?
Troy? Yeah.
No.
So in that. Hector! I'm sorry. Fucking lie.
Is it every day?
So basically in Troy, Hector obviously got beat up by Achilles.
Beat up? He got killed?
Yeah. Consequently beat up, innit? And yeah, and then Achilles like took his body and attached it at the end of the chariot and was just driving around. Look at me. And then he refused to give his body back, and so at in the night the king came back. He was like, please give me my son, you know, you've ruined his life, he's gone from me, but at least make sure that he's, you know, his body is okay for later, you know, when it resurrects.
And you see this in all sorts of stories. You see this in Macbeth. You see this in, was it Henry? Was it, what's one of them Shakespeare films, one of the histories, one of the books?
There's loads of them, Alex.
You know, when the ghost, when the ghost comes back and he's like.
Richard the Third.
No,
Richard the Third, it's not about any sort of burial.
I know what I'm saying, but you see, like, you see the unjust killing.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The ghost comes back. Isn't that Hamlet?
Even then, that too.
Yeah, it's quite
The unjust killing, the ghost comes back.
In Richard III,
you in
he kind
life.
Of sees.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I found that a bit strange.
Oh, I just want to go to heaven and chill, man.
Please.
Like, which level? Which level you think you're going into?
The good
top one, isn't it? Inshallah.
Okay, so.
Jannatul Firdaus, that's where I'll be. I'm telling you. I'll call you people from hell.
You call you people from hell?
I'm like, hey! You just hear it from, you know, in a good place when they're like, I mean, we can't go to the good place, the bad place, but I can show you here, like, what's there
and
now.
You hear the phone and everyone's screaming.
That will be you guys.
So who was abolition for?
What do you mean?
Who was it for?
The abolitionist or the slave.
If you want to get all technical, of course, it was about maintaining economic balance in the South and the North. So
and the Caribbean.
In the Caribbean. So, you know what I'm saying? My mind always just goes back to America. But basically, in terms of the South and the North anyway, I've started there. Let me just finish there. Let me land there. It was about maintaining capitalism, about maintaining an economic balance. Because of course, if the Southerners have got loads of enslaved people mm-hmm. who are working for free, mm-hmm. their prosperity is going to knock the North out of balance. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So I've read quite a few things. I remember watching a documentary about it, and it basically said that Abraham Lincoln's, you know, him freeing the enslaved people was not about benevolence and him realizing that, you know, slavery is wrong.
Of course not.
You know, his Emancipation Proclamation was about winning the war and also maintaining economic balance between mm-hmm. the South and the North.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely. It's definitely, and pressure as well. A lot of pressure.
Okay.
There was slave uprisings happening left, right, and center.
You know?
Mm-mm.
I really thought there was a part of me, every moment when we, in this book, when we were in Faith Plantation, I really just wanted a slave, or maybe two of them, to just at night go inside and just kill Erasmus. Like you could do that.
Why are you whispering? Erasmus can't hear you.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, it could have just took two people, yeah, one to hold him down and the other one to stab his guts.
Yeah, but remember, like, when the new slave master came in, he brought in new overseers.
They had overseers, yeah.
These exactly. overseers were violent brutes.
Nah, but I'm sure that they were outnumbered, fam.
They probably were, but you can outnumber somebody, but if you mentally got them trapped...
We outnumber the government. We outnumber all of these people.
So what are we doing?
Well, this is it. They have us.
No, but
and this is why Marcus Garvey says emancipate yourself from mental slavery.
First of all, I step out of that. It's what? Cool. Because, you know, you can step out. You can say that emancipate yourself from mental slavery.
No, nah, we're all mentally enslaved.
But that's what I'm saying. But we are all...
We're all complicit. We all don't really give a shit, honestly.
It's tough. It's tough out here. But yeah, that's what
I think people give a shit. I think they just feel that they're powerless, or they feel like even what they will do doesn't make much of a difference.
Or they don't know what to do, or they're just constantly the SpongeBob meme. Whether it's just the Mr. Crab meme.
Mr. Crab, yeah.
When everyone's just like, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
God, the age of revolution has passed. We're all so...
Oh, it's coming. It just won't
Nah, I don't think so. I think we're also...
What are you talking about? The London riots was a partial revolution.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
It started a whole...
Eh? The London riots...
Okay, cool. What happened after that? What was the main scene?
All the events
it's
that
not,
happened
It's not about what happens
I'm
after
not
that.
Talking,
it's all,
no,
it's
no,
all
no,
a build-up.
No,
all revolutions...
But that's not a revolution. That's just people really distressed.
Nothing happens.
And then action happens and nothing happens afterwards.
If anything changes, revolution, politically or something.
Look at the French Revolution.
They didn't have Twitter.
No, ideas are
you're,
something.
You're basing your
ideas,
idea of revolution on what Europeans tell you is supposed to happen after a revolution. What's supposed to happen?
That's not a revolution if nothing happens.
I just said if anything happens, that's a revolution. Anything happens.
But not really.
After the London riots, there has a lot of people are becoming a lot more conscious now. A lot of people are more aware.
I don't think it's because
debate,
of the London riots.
Of course, it is.
Not of course. Where is the data to show me? I'm just saying, of course.
More police officers are being held accountable for what they're doing.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. Wait,
I mean,
what?
Since the London riots,
more police have been videoed through like police brutality across the globe.
How much is that in London? Black British identity has been questioned. We're talking about in London, in the UK.
Yeah,
okay. I'm saying, how much is that in the UK?
The whole Black British identity has been questioned since. Like, it has been a question, but it's kind of been amplified in the generation.
Of course, it has.
And like, what is it? 2011.
Yeah.
And like, you know, a whole 7 years onwards.
I would say it was like.
Do you know how ridiculous it would be
like
to say that the London riots changed nothing? That's ridiculous.
I don't think that it changed enough for it to be called a revolution.
You don't want peace online because you're saying this. I don't think, for example,
I feel like revolution is a very big thing, whether it's a political...
Because you're basing it
I'm
on
I'm not
history.
Basing it
yes,
on, like, anything,
you just
okay?
mentioned the French Revolution.
Then yes, but then why are you basing it on absolutely nothing? You're making this word app as your own and you're adding a whole new definition to it. That means you're wrong.
What definition did I give to it,
But
right?
you're saying,
what
oh, you know, if it's
it?
Just any... If it's any sort of change, it's revolution. That's what you said.
Of course it is.
Well, I don't
any
think
change.
So.
Of course. That's what... Okay, cool. Revolutions create change.
I don't think...
And all I'm asking you now is who quantifies the change?
Well, fine. I'm quantifying the change. And I personally do not think you can personally.
But
think
you're
that.
Not out here, fam, no. So you won't even know.
What do you mean?
You're not out here, fam. You won't know. Oh, so you saying that? Oh,
right. So now I have to be a gangbanger, or I have to be mandem to have a fucking opinion.
No, you said anything about gangbanger? You're showing yourself now.
Did you march?
You're showing yourself now.
I'm not showing it. How you gonna be? You're not out here.
Do you think that out here means gangbanger?
What the fuck is out here?
Did you march?
I was in Zanzibar for crying out loud.
What, here? Like,
no, I wasn't here in the Gatun London.
No, race. even okay, that's what I'm saying. So recently,
hold on a minute.
You know, one second. Like recently, there's been a whole load of Black Lives Matter marches. There's been a whole load of stop, don't shoot.
Do you march?
I never went. I'm just saying. Did you march? I never went. I'm not
no?
the one. I'm not the one.
I marched in other things. I marched with student finance.
Because you don't care about the mandem. That's why when I say you're not out here, that's what I mean. No one's talking about no gangbangers or anything like that. No one said gangbangers. Mandem are not gangbangers, bro.
I don't care about gangbangers or mandem.
But you didn't march. But you
sorry,
didn't,
I'm but sorry but to the not thing be out. I don't know what the fuck that
but
means.
If we're talking,
so then why are you talking like you do? Why are you saying, oh, I'm not a gangbanger, I'm not a mandem, bro.
If we are talking about revolution and we're talking about the stuff that's changed since the riots, so much has happened politically, especially with the Black British identity. But did you march at the Black Lives Matter march?
No, I didn't.
Well then.
Well then.
What has that got to do with anything?
That's what I'm saying. So much has changed. So much has changed up until that point, and we're having the conversations.
What that means? Like, why are you saying, did you march? Tell me why. You're linking that to whatever discussion
because
that we're having.
Because these are all intrinsically linked to that riot.
Okay, but tell me why you said, did you march? As in, I don't understand what me marching means for the general
discussion. Because then you wouldn't have said that nothing happened after the riot then.
But I know that the marches have taken place. So tell me what you mean when you say,
guys, let's march? Let's move on.
I don't understand what that question.
Means.
I'm
waiting for her to finish the question.
Yeah, I don't understand what that little thing has got to do with the general discussion.
I have basically said that since the 2011 riots, it happened in London.
I don't think much has changed.
Nothing has changed.
No,
you said that. You said there was no revolution. That's not
right,
the revolution that, you,
that
you look at.
But what I said,
mm-hmm. and what I will continue to be saying, and what I have made a consistent attempt to say.
You think there was
in
a revolution?
This whole thing, I said there has been a concrete difference in the way that we approach our identities and the things that's happened up until this point.
Tell it.
So then I'm saying, then, did you not march or did you not see those things? Because you wouldn't say that nothing has changed if you had seen that.
Well, okay. I don't think much
that's
has changed.
Saying.
And if the things that have changed do not, and this is the initial thing that I was fighting Derek about, do not have, I think, a link to the London riots. I don't think the London riots caused the changes that we're seeing in political thought and consciousness now.
But you're saying changes and
that's
you're making
weird.
It too broad. Too
no,
vague.
And you're saying who quantifies broad. This, but then who quantifies your idea?
No, you're
why
saying,
is it my idea that needs other sorts of quantification, but you're saying it's because
I am very okay, fam. I'm very okay, fam. Listen to what I'm saying to you. I just said any change is revolution, and then you're saying no, I don't think it is. And I'm saying, but who?
I don't.
I'm saying who quantifies it? That my thing doesn't need quantifying. One thing, bruv. That's it, bruv. I'm asking you, what are you quantifying? You're talking about the French Revolution, which was some massive massacre, people getting killed.
There are loads of revolutions.
I know there's loads of revolutions, even recently,
like with the Arab Spring, governments got toppled down. So that's what I'm saying. For me,
and
that
that's
is
why
revolution.
I'm saying that your revolution
British,
is
British
based
government
on
did
some...
nothing happened to British government. To change anything.
So what you're basically saying to me is that revolution,
age,
there has to be some
people,
sort of bloodshed or something.
We are in the age of Twitter.
I don't know where you got bloodshed, but
because
I'm saying
Instagram,
government
because you,
changed.
You mentioned the French Revolution, and you mentioned the Arab Spring. They've
and
both
sorry.
Been bloody revolution. That's what you're
okay,
about.
Okay, fine.
There.
If that's what you think of it, fine. But with me, it's more so...
You want to see the government toppled.
Not even toppled.
You want anarchy.
Changing. Who says about anarchy?
That's what anarchy is.
No, I'm not saying that.
Can we move on, please?
It could be political change. It could be political thought. It could be the changing of government. The fucking bringing down of the royal family.
Alex is saying that political
something.
Thought has changed.
Well, I don't think so.
Okay.
And
moving on.
And it's not because of the London riots. They didn't change that.
And to quote Wes from Love Island, that's fine.
That's fine.
Cool.
That's cool.
But it seems it's not fine then, because I don't know why my opinion
it
is
doesn't
like,
matter.
Yeah, what do you mean you didn't see the change? And then now you're like, but that's fine then.
No, it's fine.
Said that's fine at
no,
the front.
No,
no, no. I'm saying it's fine that you have that opinion.
Well, when I tried to move on, you was like, no.
Yeah, because you didn't want me to have my say. That's why.
You had your say.
You had your say.
I've had mine.
You've been having your say.
No, I haven't.
So what else do you want to say?
I'm done with the thought of what I had in it. All I'm saying is the London riots were not responsible for the change or if you think there is change that has happened now.
Let's leave it to listeners.
That was in 2011.
Listeners,
we were all very, very not woke.
From the UK and London or wherever, Do you think that the 2011 riots have had a difference on the way
any
that
kind
we
of
are,
effect on the political
on the way
landscape.
We are now?
Now landscape. Everyone's doing any kind of.
But that's what I said. I said any change is a revolution. I said any change from the beginning. So don't try and see you later.
Okay.
Sorry.
Well, I don't think any change is revolution. Personally, I think revolution has a specific type of change. Any change could be anything.
You're literally just coming against anything I'm saying. And
no, but I've told you this though. You said any change is revolution. I don't believe that.
But then you just said so. Now we're saying. But I've been saying that from the beginning.
Cool. Well, I don't believe that any change. It could be like change.
Where
could
would
be
you?
Anything.
Where would you have stood with the abolitionists then? Because then it's kind of like.
What do you mean?
It's kind of a similar thing. Like, okay. What has changed? Because nothing really changed, but the fact that they were enslaved. So what has? Do you know what I mean? Like, did anything change after when the abolitionists came and said in the initial phases? Because you know,
no,
a whole 10 years.
With this actually, I read about this, and a lot of the slaves, there was some research done. Oh man, I did this when I was at uni. There was some research done, and some slaves found it even harder within the first few couple of years or whatever to actually move on, because before they were provided with housing or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And moving forward, it was kind of like, fend for yourself. And that, there was this research done where there was like, I think I read a text or something, and they were like, a lot of slaves were like, rah, like, fuck. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And I get that. It's like being imprisoned and you're not paying taxes and you're being fed and shit. Yeah. You're still in prison, which is awful. And you have to come out here. You don't know what the fuck to do. And you end up killing yourself.
In the book, because even they go to Erasmus's mum. They go to the house in, that manor house. And she, you know, in the Caribbean, when emancipation came about, there was this whole apprenticeship scheme whereby they were being paid to work on the fields because the fields needed to still be worked on. And like, there was kind of a disagreement. And she was like, well, you know, they were handsomely paid and they were this, that, and the other. But then Wash was just like, well, but they were still enslaved. Because they're in the same, they're in the exact same position, yeah. They're in the exact same hearts. Did they rebuild the houses for them? Did they do all these things?
Exactly the kind of things that we're doing now, though, in terms of the jobs that we have to do.
Oh, absolutely not.
And
we can't.
I'm not comparing it, but I'm just saying I'm trying to like extrapolate something out there in terms of general society. I'm not saying that we have it as hard as them. Obviously, you know, that's stupid. But I'm saying that in. What'd you say?
Nothing.
Just being stupid.
Carry on.
But you're not that what? But like,
yeah.
I guess. I mean, I don't know if we can. I don't know if we can make it so concrete like that. But I guess I just find it difficult to imagine that when abolition came about and the emancipation came about, there wasn't an immediate change. Straight away, and it's been a long time. So,
once they'd freed the enslaved, they should have then provided them with houses, provided them with jobs, provided them with all of these kind of infrastructures to help them.
They didn't, quote unquote,
infrastructures to help them. You know,
they don't even have infrastructure now.
Yeah, well, true. Yeah, exactly. But to you know, get them into society rather than just say, "All right, boom, you're free." Like you've got nothing. Like, do you know what I mean? And even like, especially in the Caribbean, when the enslaved were freed, the enslavers were being paid money to compensate
reparations.
Them. And the enslaved didn't get anything. They didn't get nothing. You understand?
Yeah.
Ridiculous, but yeah. But anyway, that was Washington Black.
But it sounds like it was horrible.
obviously an interesting book considering the discussion.
I guess guys, go out and get the book and have a read of that. But so this week is Halloween as well. We wanted to just have a quick chat about Halloween things. I mean, this time last year we did episode. Ghostly Lit last year.
Ghostly Lit last year.
But I wanted to ask, like, what makes a good horror story for you guys?
Alex, you know we ain't been reading horror.
Why not?
Because let's ask Ray.
I don't read horror. However,
this is what I'm saying, you know,
ghost stories.
I remember I was gonna say about the scariest thing I've read was there was, I think it was one of the books. I think it might have been book 3 of a series of unfortunate events.
Book 3, yes. The Drowning.
I thought you were going to say Harry Potter. Didn't one of you say Harry Potter? There's a Harry Potter book that was scary.
Well, the Chamber of Secrets was freaky for an 11-year-old.
Which one was freaky?
The Chamber of Secrets.
And you were like, you were shivering when you were reading it.
Chamber was scary, but it wasn't. It was just diary that was like, ooh, Debbie's talking back. But yeah, I think, so I don't know which book it is, but it's the book that something happened. I think somebody got pushed into something and then you open the next page and it was just structured really well. So at the end, it says something like, oh, you know, and then they got pushed down or something. And then you open the next page and the whole page is black.
Oh, that was like, I think that was far in there.
Yeah, possibly, because I read that one. I was like,
that was well in.
How many books are there?
Like, I want to say 12.
Yeah, I think there's 12. Mm. I think this was 11, low key.
It's the penultimate ending.
I really missed out of childhood
the
reading,
penultimate
boy.
Peril, sorry.
Really but yeah, so it was one of these books.
I think you'd like that as well.
And I remember being like, I screamed. I know where I was. I was at my cousin's house. My aunt was pregnant and she probably didn't want to deal with my drama. So she sent me to my cousin's house. Well, you know those cousins? Actually, you know the girl that stopped me on the road that time? And she goes, are you Mumley's cousin?
Oh, yeah.
It was Mumley. And we weren't really cousins, but you say your cousins anyway. And I was... I was upstairs in her room and I was reading it and I opened and it was just pitch black and I threw it away and I went,
it must be later on.
There's something about blackness that is, I remember what...
The emptiness.
The one thing that used to terrify me as a child was A Muppet's Christmas Carol. And it's because...
I loved that film.
Because the third ghost that comes, I think it's the ghost of Christmas Future. It's just like this ghoul, it's got no face. It's just a black... It's just a hood.
You read A Christmas Carol, though. Sorry.
I've read it.
Yeah. You know the story.
I haven't seen it yet.
The Muppets one's good. Watch The Muppets one.
Yeah, it's good. But it's like just a hood.
Loads of songs.
No face. It's just black. Sorry. And that used to terrify me. Also, the Marley Brothers used to terrify me as well.
You never... I like
the Marleys, but they're scary.
You know, what? I never found The Muppets Christmas Carol scary. I never found it scary. I never thought it to be a scary book.
And there was like this ghost thing. She was made of glass or something. Do you remember?
Yeah, and it's like the close of Christmas.
Oh my god,
past.
yeah. Oh
and
my
she was
god.
Like, basically, so in the film, it's like various different puppets that are kind
you
of
read the Christmas Carol, right?
Read it, haven't.
You know the story. Yeah. You know the story.
You know the story, yeah.
But like, the ghost of Christmas past in this, and like she takes Ebenezer out and about.
Man, like Ebenezer, you know?
Yeah, it was.
I just really love the name. It really suits him.
Ebenezer
Scrooge.
It really does.
Really, it's like another name. Oh, Rumpelstiltskin. That was the one fairy tale that always scared me.
Charles Dickens comes up with these really weird names, doesn't he? Martin Chiswick. What's that?
Philip Pirrip, that's my favourite one. Philip Pirrip, we call him Pip.
I always struggle with names when writing.
Philip Pirrip.
So is it Rumpelstiltskin was one that scared you?
Yeah, Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know why, he's just someone that really, till now, I'm just like,
what is Rumpelstiltskin? You know what, even, is he just like this little gremlin thing or something?
Basically he's a he's something.
He's something.
I don't know if he's a person or not.
Is it like the Hunchback of Notre Dame or something?
Kind of, but like he basically tricks people into doing what he wants them to do.
So he's a demon.
Basically says that.
So he's a djinn.
He's a trickster. No, a trickster.
He's not.
Rumpelstiltskin's djinn. Okay.
You say like, and you know,
the name is quite cool. Suits him.
Yeah, because you know everything comes at a cost with him. Mm. There's never a clean deal with him. But then it's kind of made worse on. Once Upon a Time. Did you ever watch that TV show?
Nope. I stopped.
Yeah, Rumpelstiltskin was
Did he
evil.
Show up?
He's evil in that. Did you watch it?
From the beginning?
Yeah, he's evil.
I'm sure that's Rumpelstiltskin. Rumpel.
Yeah.
He just...
And he becomes like really like... He's just really evil. But yeah.
That is a really good show.
Did you guys ever watch Goosebumps?
I used to know that.
Are you afraid of the dark?
Are you afraid of the dark? You know when Nickelodeon got crazy at 7 p.m.
Yeah,
fucking show ever. I fucking love that show.
That was scary. And there was one thing called, was it called Round the Twist?
Round the Twist.
Something like that. I can't remember. But yes, Are You Afraid of the Dark? I can't remember any of the stories. The only Goosebumps story I remember was one about a mask. The mask. It was like some green mask. Mm. And you put it on, you can't take it off. That's the only.
I actually can't watch horror because I have to watch it with someone because I'm a kid. Mm. I remember when I went to watch The Woman in Black with my friend. he was like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?"
Oh, no.
And I was like, "Please, no. I get really scared. I can't watch."
I thought I was stepping out there and being like, "Let me go and watch like this scary film." And I went to watch.
Have you seen The Exorcist?
No, I went to watch The Visit.
Nah.
And M. Night Shyamalan. I don't know what he was doing on this film. But
I can't even watch that film where they go and kill each other.
The Purge.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's not horror.
I'm sorry, it's horror.
A very political film.
Because I'm just like, I tried to watch at my friend's house. I was like, please, I won't be able to go home.
Okay.
Wait, so, have any of you guys seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No.
Eh?
Is it a musical?
Yeah, kind of. It's very, very forward thinking. People go to the cinema to watch it, they usually dress up. It's kind of like, LGBT. I always get those letters mixed up.
But is it like secret cinema sort of thing?
No.
So why would you dress up to go?
Because you dress up as the characters, you know?
Okay.
But anyway, sorry. That's out there.
I don't know. Have we answered this? What have the scariest moments been in your reading?
That's my scariest.
What? My scariest?
That's a series of unfortunate events. Yeah. I need to figure out which book that is so I can put it in the show notes.
Cool.
So
I think the scariest moment actually for me was reading... probably War of the Worlds. When the aliens first came, and then there's like one of the aliens in the ground, they're just like, what's this? And then it kind of material like builds itself up, and then it kills one guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, I just found the way H.G. Wells wrote that was really scary, bro. Like I was actually shook. And then when they're running around the countryside trying to hide from the aliens and stuff, it's actually scary, bruv. No, seriously, it's quite scary. I'm sure Orson Welles read it on the radio once, and they didn't know that he was reading from War of the Worlds, and they actually thought an alien invasion was happening right there and then.
It was that convincing.
Oh, God. I'm pretty sure, listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Orson Welles, I can't remember.
Okay.
I like, 1984, when they get caught, that was one of the most scariest moments ever for me. I remember being shook.
Oh my God.
I was like,
when the TV
I was in, because they made you scared, so I was comfortable. I was like, shit. I had to reread. I was like,
they get you comfortable. It's like when you know when they make you watch these things and you're concentrating and something just pops up and scares you. It was like that.
Yeah, that was just.
Yeah.
Oh, and you always remember when you were in these moments. I was in the back of the bus on the W16 when I read that. I had to do a double take. I went,
oh God, I don't remember any. I need to think about this.
So you read Stephen King, don't you?
I don't read Stephen King. Oh. I haven't read any of his.
Really, no.
I can't think of anything that I've read that has made me really jump out like that.
I've got The Shining. I'm going to read The Shining.
I can only remember that obviously the Chamber of Secrets, but with the snake in the wall, that's the only thing I can really remember.
What about those weeping violets? Are they called weeping violets? Weeping angels.
So that's in
Doctor Who. That's scary as hell. Like I haven't even seen.
I don't want to talk about.
I haven't seen the episode, but that's scary as hell. Can you imagine?
Fam.
Can you imagine? They move when you close your eyes.
When you blink.
When you
blink, they'll be closer to you.
Nah,
so dead. You're literally like you have to look at them.
Dead. Nah.
And then you have to move back somewhere because if you blink, they'll be right.
That's scary as hell. I ain't doing that.
Also, have you guys watched the most recent Doctor Who?
No, I don't watch Doctor
Who.
Oh,
you guys don't watch? Oh, okay, cool.
I tried.
Just watch it on my
I tried watching it.
You can't just come on.
But I'm not going to go all the way back.
Anyway, we're pressed for time, so let's move on to Mostly Flicks, baby.
Yeah, let's do that. So this week on Mostly Flicks,
we watched the classics.
Oh, God.
The ultimate.
I didn't finish it, by the way.
Yeah.
You didn't finish it?
No.
I'm fucking fuming.
Really?
It's a classic.
I'm
so shocked you haven't seen it, Ray.
I have seen it when I was younger and I forgot it.
Yeah.
I actually watched it when I came.
I think it'd be good to tell people what the film is.
The film is called Coming to America. And I really feel like that's all I need to say.
And
I feel like all of our listeners
It's so problematic.
Know,
really?
It's very problematic.
I mean, I know it's problematic, but I really feel like there's so much to talk about on this.
There's so much. The thing is, the movie, it's an actual problem. There's so much to unpack.
So much. Whatever.
Watch it. I'm just like,
What's the film about? Some people might not have watched it.
Okay, so it's about.
It was made in 1988.
Yeah, so it's about a prince from a fictional African country called Zamunda.
Oh, Wakanda.
He's betrothed to just a woman he's never met. And he's kind of like.
To serve whatever you like.
There's a good scene where he's like, he's excited to be married, but how can a man be excited about a woman he has never seen? And then so he decides to go to America. Where can you find a woman to marry? Of course, Queens, New York.
So cliche.
Where would a king find his queen?
Yeah,
in Queens.
So they go to Queens, and then he basically falls in love with Lisa McDowell, who has a man who loves Jerry Curl. His family runs a Jerry Curl company called Soul Glow. he doesn't tell her that he's a prince, and then she finds out he's a prince.
And then his daddy comes.
And then dad comes, and then they're on the train, and there's that iconic scene where that old white woman chewing her chewing gum, she's like, "Go on, honey, take a chance." And then she gets off the train and she leaves him behind. But then at the end, he lifts the veil and who's there? Lisa McDowell.
Yeah.
And her money hungry dad.
Yeah. Initial thoughts.
Kind of problematic.
You can obviously tell I love it.
I just feel like
I do. It's a funny film. I think it's funny. What I don't like are the different people that Eddie Murphy plays. I think it's just like,
what?
I don't like it.
Do you know that he's the Jewish man as well?
Oh, it's sick.
And did you know the two people from Trading Places?
Yeah, they're in it. Yeah, they made a cameo role.
Yeah, they made a cameo.
I remember we were like, I love Nutty Professor, but I'm past it. But the different, like the ones in the barber shop.
You didn't like the barbershop scenes?
No.
They're the best scenes.
I was literally like, why are you chatting? Like, shut up, man. I just got so pissed. It was so corny.
Oh my God. How is it corny?
I didn't like it.
I've never thought of Coming to America as corny.
It's corny.
It's corny.
Because when you think about it, because this is one of the questions I wanted to ask now, because like, it's... Is the film riddled with cliche, or does it begin all cliches from there onwards?
It begins with cliches, but Hakim is a character. He becomes a person. You know what he's like. Okay, he's an African prince who walks on roses. Okay, cool. But you also know he's a compassionate person. You know that he reads Nietzsche. You know that he does read Nietzsche.
Yeah.
You know that he falls in love. He gives money to obviously the two guys from Trading Places. Mm-hmm. He's a well-rounded character, I personally feel. Therefore, to call him...
I didn't like Simi.
A cliche. I didn't really like Simi. Is a bit... The cliche in the movie is the whole fucking light-skinned sister who finds love and then the dark-skinned sister who's a thot. Or how do you say it? Dot.
What's she a thot?
That's how they tried to portray her.
She basically just couldn't get the prince. She got the prince's
side
man.
Not just that, fam. What are you talking about? When my man comes in with a Jericho dripping with rain, and then she's like, "Let's get you out of those wet clothes." Unzip the trap. What do you think they're trying to say? And then he looks at the camera like, "Yeah, you know what's it? No, okay, it is." Okay. You know what I mean? That's the cliche.
Didn't Samuel Jackson make a cameo in that? As a madman or a robber?
He's a robber
or some kind of thing. Anyway.
Anybody move out?
I don't know. I just found it really corny, man.
I can't believe it.
There was much.
I think it was apt for the time, maybe.
It was apt for the time. Because then I think like
it's still good.
It's still good. That's what I mean. Like, is it the precursor to a lot of other comedy films are made?
Black films have evolved now. We don't have to be so problematic to be funny. You know?
That's true.
It's not that true. Because
you've seen Trading Places.
I have,
and that is.
Yeah,
There's only one problematic moment in
Trading Places, in my opinion, and that's when my man does blackface. He dressed up as a Rasta on the train.
Yeah,
and he's got the dreadlocks.
Yeah,
and he's actually in blackface.
And like you kind of just you look at the reason for why that happened, and you think to yourself, and there's a kind of like a conflict. There was a conflict in me watching that. I was like, okay, I don't like the blackface, but they needed to get the thing. But is it still okay?
There's plenty of other ethnicities he could have been. He didn't have to be a Jamaican.
That's true. What was Eddie Murphy in that scene? Was he not like a...
I think... Was he not
an Asian person or something? An Indian?
Oh, no, he was an African. He had the thing. Yeah.
There we go, fulfilling all the stereotypes. And then Eddie Murphy's career is based on stereotypes.
The butler was an Irish guy.
Eddie Murphy's career is based on stereotypes, and I feel like it's just all of
it. It's interesting that we're now talking about stereotypes, because just as an aside, you know, I've heard The Simpsons are now actually probably going to drop Apu as a character from the series.
Why?
Because people say...
He's that Asian guy.
People say he's problematic. He's a problematic character. Again. They say he's a dangerous stereotype.
The Simpsons are still going?
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Why?
My mum always did make me turn it off.
I wasn't allowed to watch it. It was like, too problematic for my house. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
No, Simpsons is genius.
It is genius, but like, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't watch it at home.
Well,
I never watched it with my deviant friends.
The first 8 seasons, genius. After that, I guess a bit...
I never watched it religiously like that. I would just watch it and be like...
Oh, okay. I did. Like, every day on BBC Two, 6 o'clock, Simpsons.
BBC Two? It was Channel 4.
No, it was BBC Two first. I'm pretty sure.
They moved to Channel 4 for the 6 o'clock.
Then they moved to Channel 4, yeah.
But I know sure that I wasn't allowed to watch. Like, my mum would always make me turn it up. That and Keenan and Kel, for some reason.
What? You didn't watch Keenan and Kel?
I watched Keenan and Kel. Oh. But, like, when it came on in the evening, my mum was like, you
it
can't
be
watching
it was
that.
Futurama, Family Guy.
Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
And no.
Have you guys seen the trailer that. for the new Sabrina?
You never watched Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Of course I did.
Oh, okay.
And The Secret World of Alex Mack.
I'm going to watch this.
Am I the only one who watched that?
I don't
yeah.
This woman, she could turn into like a puddle and go underneath the wall. She could move things with her hands. She could, I think, shoot like electricity. The Secret World of Alex Mack. Did no one watch that? It's the same girl who plays Sabrina and Clarissa.
Oh, Melissa.
No, Clarissa. Is it?
Clarissa.
She did play Clarissa, didn't she?
Yeah.
So she played three of them.
Yeah.
Clarissa. I lost Salem. I always wanted to be a witch.
I liked Sabrina. I liked Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. But I like the way they've turned, I like the way they've made it into a darker kind of.
Apparently it's something about, it's really intense. It's dark. Where can I watch it?
Netflix. I mean, she's a witch, isn't
it? It's on Netflix, yeah.
Not yet, it's not on there yet.
It'll be on there soon.
I wanna watch that thingy with Renze and Michaela Cole.
I heard it's dead.
They gave it British Blacklist gave it 7 out of 10.
I heard it's bad.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna I think I might watch it. We'll watch it today, actually.
Okay, let's have we'll watch it. But anyway, yeah, so that's coming to America. It's coming to America, you know what I mean? Like, it's not the...
I've really come to America, I've never met a Ghanaian in my life who's never seen that movie. I don't think I've met someone from the motherland who has not seen Coming to America.
A black person, just a black...
And who doesn't like it?
Oh, I don't like it.
We like the film.
Huh?
I don't not like it.
Oh, I thought you didn't like it.
We like film, but we've got to treat it with a level of interrogation.
Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't get an off, you know what I mean?
Production-wise, directing-wise, there's things that he slipped up in.
Eddie Murphy looks really buff in it, though, because I was like, oh, he's really fine.
Yeah, back in the day. Like,
nice lips.
Yeah, when he was younger, he was out here.
At the time, with his 15 kids now. When people from the continent were being portrayed in a certain way.
Yeah, this was
for Eddie Murphy to come and do, we're rich, we're smart, we can fight, we'll get the girls, we're humble, we don't.
That was good.
Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, fam. Like, he really come to spin the narrative.
The royal penis is now clean.
Do you know what I mean? He came to spin the narrative.
It's my favorite line.
Obviously, now it hasn't aged that well.
A whole mess. But like, you know when they took you to Zamunda and it was just like all these animals running around the garden. Yeah. I was just like
the elephant.
The giraffe.
Oh, he's like, hello,
the giraffe
Baba.
Was running.
Yeah. One of the elephants is called Baba, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch Baba?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with what, the king? The elephant family.
Yeah, elephant family.
The elephant family, and he's the prince.
Anyway, we're just going off now.
Anyway, so Coming to America.
Yeah, Coming to America.
Okay, cool. Rounding up. Anything, guys, you want to round off with?
Don't forget to come to our BFI show. We're going to have some clips from some movies. We're going to review
a movie
we
need to
soon.
Discuss. Yeah.
And we're going to discuss the movie and whatnot, blah, blah, blah. But it's a mostly lit show. Big emphasis on mostly flicks, obviously, because it's the BFI.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, come and don't forget, you can get discount tickets as well.
Yeah, so that's BFI.
That's why my friend was like, why'd they charge me that amount? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah,
BFI, November the 3rd, it's for Podstock, and it'll be at 2 p.m. We've tweeted it out. It will be on our website, mostly-lit.com. And there may or may not be a code that you guys can... use to get some money off, but we'd like to see you there.
Absolutely, so next week. Please next come week? This support
week?
The team.
Next week
it'll be this week with regards when this comes out. It'll be that week.
It'll Alex, be it doesn't matter. This week Saturday. I mean,
it does, yeah. So this week.
All cool. Right, cool.
Yeah, guys. Anything else you want to say? Anything else you want to add? Anything else you want to bring up? Okay, cool.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.